film sucks. Indie film sucks. It's the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Yeah.
Coming at you from the mean streets of St. Louis, from a basement on South Broadway, the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Because indie film gets better with age, like fine wine.
Oh, that nice. Fine. Wow, man. You were in a good mood tonight, buddy.
Not really.
Okay, well, you started off in a good mood. Yeah.
Start off strong.
That's awesome. How you doing?
Never better.
Never better.
Never
that's,
better.
That's awesome. All right, we're not going to talk about or suck tonight because Brock's on assignment.
That's right. Brock is on assignment.
Brock's on assignment. I think he'll be back soon, but he's off doing what he does best.
So what are we going to talk about tonight?
Tonight, you know, we just got off that great interview with Scott Michael Dunn.
We did.
There was a lot of good things in there. Please, you know, if you like that one, tell your friends to listen. That 112 subscribers is what we're up to.
113.
Nice. You checked it today, huh?
I did.
Nice. Yeah.
I could be that. More by the time this airs.
Exactly. Or that Scott Michael Dunn interview. No, you know, there's a lot in there. A lot of good stuff. A lot of good points. What a great guy. Great actor. But we mentioned in there several times about call it what you want. We called it formula, right? Call it a recipe. Call it, you know, your idea, you know, putting it into some sort of context. But what are the things that it takes to hopefully make your movie successful, right? You got to start somewhere. We always mention good script.
Sure, the five pillars, as I
right, right, mentioned. And that's I think a high level formula, right? Or those are the things that are the baseline formula.
That's the baseline, and the five pillars were script, acting, production design, audio, cinematography. In my opinion, I mean, they're all equal, but that's kind of the order of importance that I put them. And so many people, not to go off topic,
that's right.
So many people put everything into the cinematography bucket. I've seen so many films that were shot with a shallow depth of field, and they're like everyone used drone shots, everything shot in a gimbal looks really nice, but who cares if your script sucks?
Right, you got a bad story.
You got a bad story, doesn't matter how pretty it is.
We're finding out sound is key.
But
some of our old properties, right? Going back and remixing, trying to firm it up a little bit based off of today's new technology, getting things out on Film Hub, thinking about other platforms. But sound is my point there. That's a key.
But as far as formula goes, that's just baseline stuff. It's like that's the bare minimum you have to hit to make a competent film.
Okay, so let's now take the next step on formula and go, I think it should drive towards ROI. If you look at it from a formula standpoint, things that could return profit to your investors or what? Because Scott was mentioning a lot about the ROI, and we talked about that. But now we look at what? Name.
Sure.
Right? Does that return certain things? What genre?
Yes.
Budget? Money?
Well, I mean, that kind of goes without saying. Because there's really two... probably more than two, but let's just say for our intents and purposes, two schools of thought.
Okay.
There are people who just want to make film for the sake of making film, for the sake of making art, and they don't care about any sort of return on investment.
Right.
And those people exist.
And they have their formula for making that.
Yes.
Okay. So.
And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, and that is a far easier mountain to climb if you just want to make an art film just for you, and you don't give two damns about making money back. And you don't care if anyone else even likes it. You want to make the exact film that you want to make, and you have no...
you don't care where it goes, you're going to move on to the next one.
Yeah, you have no responsibility to investors, nothing like that. That's one school of thought. And then the other is, of course, you are trying to make this a for-profit enterprise.
Okay. So that's my point, is we talked a lot about formula, recipe... there's so many different, it means different things to different people.
Yeah.
Like you just said, going, okay, Chris, it depends on who you are.
Yeah.
Are you an artist just making art? Are you somebody that wants to try to do this for a living and return an ROI? Do you have investors? So that would dictate right? Your formula.
Yeah. And
I would think.
And I would say that these two things are not mutually exclusive, right? Just top of the list example of someone who is an artistic filmmaker who also makes a profit, David Lynch.
Okay.
Yeah. David Lynch, probably the most highest profile in the common body of knowledge, artistic filmmaker.
I would think there's several people like that, but when you get to his level, wouldn't it be great to combine both?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what you strive for, but I think it's an individual's choice whether you're going to do that or not. But I think when we first start out, you get into it for art, ROI, investors, trying to make a living, fun. You know, there's all kinds of reasons, and I think the way you put those together are going to dictate how it turns out or what your end result is. So that's why I use the word formula. You brought up a good point saying, well, if you're in it for the art, your formula might be this. If you're in it for return on investment, your formula is definitely going to be this. Well, no, I can't say
not definite. Even definitely. There, right. There are no definite.
Right. If you have money, then your formula opens up big time. But even, I think, large studio, they have a formula.
Sure.
Right? They have a pad thing that they have to do.
Yeah, that's why you see so many people complain about, oh, Hollywood films, and they just kind of crank out these, like, superhero movies. They all kind of follow the same pattern. And that's true to an extent because, you know, it's a business. People, you don't make a $250 million movie to not make money back.
Right. At $250 million, you are not trying to be experimental.
Generally, no.
Because experimental sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
So, where are we at with that? Where are we at with, because I know when we set
the bottom of the barrel.
No, from 40, everybody can have a formula. It doesn't mean we're at the bottom of the barrel, but 5 years ago, our thought process was different than it is today on how we think the ideas of making a movie. If we have this, we have a better chance of being successful. To me, it has. To me, it's changed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one thing that is smart to do is find a genre that you're comfortable in. Hopefully, ideally, it's a marketable, sellable genre. And more or less stick to that. Right? And what is a big one, as everyone knows, is horror.
Yeah.
It's a broad genre. There are many different facets of it, and it's pretty sellable at all levels.
Now, I definitely agree with that. Find a genre, A, that you enjoy.
Yeah.
That you're have a passion, have interest in, that you can, I guess, put out there effortlessly because you're into it. I mean, it'd be hard for us to make if we were into World War II ships. It would be very difficult for us to pull something like that off at an indie level.
It would be nigh impossible. I mean, never say nothing's completely impossible. No,
we can do some interiors.
I'm not sure we could do that. Yeah, you're right. If you wanted to do a World War II naval film, that would be tough on an indie budget.
Right. So think about the audience. Think about what's sellable. Think about where maybe you have some passions within reason.
Yeah. Right.
So, and then to that, though, so if we just picked action horror, such as Bright Night in Skies,
yeah,
that doesn't necessarily, for me, that says, that to me, that's too broad now. Whereas I would maybe take that down and go, that's great start, but how do you fine-tune that from a formula standpoint?
Sure.
That from where we were to where we're at today, that's what's changed for me on that piece of that formula. So now we have a genre. So pick a genre. Okay, what's your opinion on putting named actors versus non-named actor, saying you have, I don't know, $100,000 budget?
Man, I have gone back and forth on this. At one time, I would have said 100% you've got to get names in there. And now I'm not 100% convinced anymore that you do. But let me clarify that. If you have, let's say a $250,000 to $1 million budget, right? Then, which is not really a ton of money,
no,
but it's enough to put a couple of recognizable name actors in your film. You're going to get a lot of bang for your buck. So I think in that case, it's probably a smart move. But if you have, let's say, under $100,000, then it's kind of a toss up.
It gives you an edge. It gives you an edge.
It can. It
gives you a slight angle.
It can give you a slight edge and get a little bit more interest. Certainly more interest than you would get without any names in it. But how big of a name actor are you going to get at that budget level? And for how much time can you put them in the movie?
Okay. So I would agree that if you're building out a formula for, okay, we got a genre, now you're saying names, I think it does depend on the budget.
Absolutely.
If you got a $1 million movie, the expectation is you probably have a name in it.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard to pull off a $1 million movie without a name, because I don't know what you're going to do, right? You can only put so many special effects at our level. You can only
I don't know. You could spend $1 million pretty quick.
No, I agree. Sure. I agree with that, but you're probably spending it on the wrong stuff.
Maybe.
Right, but if somebody said you had $1 million and you don't have somebody in it that's recognizable, I would think they made a mistake.
Yeah, you'd have to really have something that breaks the mold, I think, to make a $1 million movie without any recognizable talent. It has to be so incredible, so unique, so never seen before to find an audience that I don't think that's possible.
Well, it would be making stars then, right? You would be if you had something like that, you would be making stars.
Sure.
Or a recognizable name from that. And okay. That's the gotcha, right? That's the one in the million.
Yeah, and that's, of course, what happened with, you know, we said it a million times, Blair Witch Project, Paranormal Activity, Blue Ruin.
Right.
Those didn't have names. They were all modest budget. I think Blue Ruin was maybe $300,000. I don't know the exact lane. And I know Blair Witch was, you know, I don't know, 30, and Paranormal was like 7.
Yeah.
But those are the rare exceptions.
Right. And I would say Blue Ruin paid for some talent. Not named talent.
Well, it did.
But they paid for talent, as opposed to a Paranormal Activity.
They had Blue Ruin had Eve Plum, was like the biggest name. She was Jan Brady, the biggest, and she killed it in the movie, by the way. She was the biggest name in there, I think, at the time. The lead actor, Macon Blair, he went on to become, he's a fairly successful actor.
Yeah, he's,
so, you know, but it was a really well-made movie.
I agree. So, but you brought that up even with Paranormal Activity is, they had, if you look at it from a standpoint of a set, what they were thinking, they knew exactly what they were trying to make.
Yeah.
They knew in what genre, because they were trying to create their own kind of niche genre that nobody's done before. And they knew they could do it for a shoestring budget, and it didn't need stars.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing, if you have that, then you don't necessarily need to add this part of the formula.
I think you can make a $10,000 to $20,000 movie, but you have to be a seasoned filmmaker, I think, to do that. And still bring the level of technical quality that is needed to reach a wider audience.
No, I would absolutely agree with that. So, genre is important.
It is.
I think jury's out kind of at what level do you bring in somebody with a name that's established, because that cost is going to be set based off of them, right?
So generally, yeah.
You know what you're bringing in. I mean, same with bringing in a car crash. Same with bringing in a stunt guy. That you kind of know what you're getting. It's got to be a set kind of thing that, hey, we're putting $10,000 aside for this.
Yeah.
So that's a set cost, yeah. I think. So what would be another thing? I was just trying to brainstorm a little bit on, like, what we thought when we had Cruiser, right? We're like, well, if we do this, right, we have the genre. It's a horror-esque kind of, that bloody kind of action, punch in the face, you know, that type of movie with some names for a higher budget. What else were we thinking on that we kind of transferred over to Red Knight? At one point we thought music was key.
Yeah, and I still think music's key, but again, it can be an impossible expense. And we're talking about songs that everyone has heard of,
that's
right?
That's a great point.
I mean, you can get music for free or for dirt cheap.
Yeah, we're talking absolutely buying music that's already established that is going to drive your movie because it's already known and fitting it into that right scene so it's memorable.
Yeah, and that ain't cheap, man.
Right, and again, I think if you have the money and you're making a high enough budget, you almost kind of would be expected to put that in there.
Yeah.
But at one time, we thought, this is because we were even trying it for Red Knight.
Oh,
We reached out and did some things. So it's interesting how we thought about things, the reality of it, and then we looked back and went, man, And I don't think Red Knight needed the song. It'd been great to have it.
Yeah, it would have been. But, you know, again, it would have been another cost. You would have had to rob Peter to pay Paul. And it's like, is it worth it? No.
Is it worth it from that side? I think the fact that we picked up the talent we did was worth it.
Yeah.
And we picked a genre that I thought was worth it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else in those? I mean, those are really the three things that we were thinking of? Or what else?
Well, I mean,
what we talked about with Scott last week.
You kind of mentioned a few other things like, you know, car crashes and stunts and things like that. To do those properly require professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you can just, you know, put a brick on your buddy's old Buick and run into a tree and hope for the best.
Hope you get it the first time.
Yeah, and nor is that safe or recommended.
Okay. That's not recommended. Kids, don't try that.
Yeah, so in order to, you know, do things like blow up a car or whatever, that takes money because you got to bring in a professional to do it. I mean, yeah, you can do whatever the hell you want. If you just want to get your AR-15 and shoot up, you know, grandpa's old car, no one's going to stop you, but that's wildly unsafe to do things like that.
Well, it's unpredictable. It's not a professional doing it. And when you said professional, where I thought you were going to go is a professional set. I think that control, I mean, unless that's something that's just what you think would be understood.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be a union set.
No. Okay, maybe we're missing that on union versus what I'm thinking of. I'm just saying bringing in seasoned veterans, indie guys, indie people who understand how to be on an indie set.
Sure.
I think that has to be part of your plan, formula, recipe. And I don't think you can just bring in people that don't know what they're doing.
No, you can't. And to bring in, you know, professionals who work in this field, that takes money. Because you have to pay people a living wage to, you know, you're not going to get a licensed professional stuntman for, you know, $100 a day.
Very, very true.
Right?
The insurance costs more than that.
Yeah, the insurance costs more than that. I mean, yeah, maybe your cousin Ron, you know, is a orange belt in Kung Fu. And, oh, I can do that.
Right.
Sure, but you get what you pay for.
Right. Well, you pretty much waste the day because you have to train him. And you have to shoot because he's never been on film before. And
yeah.
Exactly. So I would say to try to not put words in your mouth, but the way I was thinking of the way you just said that was that if you have something in your script, which we all agree the script is very important, that requires the professionalism or a higher level skill set, that you need to make sure that that's part of how you plan this out.
Absolutely.
Don't try to do something. Either don't write the script with it in there, right?
Sure.
Because that's how we write scripts. We think about budget when we write scripts.
Yeah.
Well, we try not to, but we end up having to do that.
Oh, sure.
So we know our script is set almost for the budget that we have.
Yeah.
But if we had the car crash in there, we would have already thought, well, we're just not going to do this on our own. We would have already said, hey, we need this, this, and this. We need 3 days to shoot. We need a professional guy.
Yeah.
We need this, stunt coordinator, blah, blah, blah. So I would think part of that thought process, plan, formula would be, if your script calls for it, make sure you have the right entities, the right personnel to pull it off, because it all goes back to, if it looks like crap on film, that's money wasted, days wasted.
Exactly. And there are, of course, you know, just using a car crash as an example, there are tricks around everything. You know, the oldest trick in the book is, of course, you just have it happen off screen.
Right. Right. Noise. Yeah. Add some Foley or something.
Exactly. And then, you know, it's pretty easy to purchase a wrecked car from a junkyard, you know, happens off screen, then you have that all set. So, I mean, yeah, you can save yourself a lot of money doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that as impactful as having it happen on screen? No, it's not. But there are ways around things.
Actors' reactions, the noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. So you're a director.
Yeah.
You've thought of these things
before. All sorts of crap.
With you saying that part of it, you got me to thinking about when you get into that horror, like we are, action
horror.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kind of genre is, you know, special effects.
Yeah.
Right? Either the practical or like the digital effects.
Yeah.
And understanding that is part of your plan. You can't have a slasher movie, if you go down that route, is getting a little niche, and not have somebody understands how to have a throat slice.
Oh, sure.
Or a stab, or a big gashing wound, or something like that. Because again, it could look cheesy.
Yeah, and that's why you'll see a lot of filmmakers tout, rightfully so, made with all practical effects. You know, because you look at, like, the classic horror movies of the 80s, like The Thing and American Werewolf in London, all made, you know, pre-digital. So it's like, what you're seeing is what you're seeing. And there's a weight to that that digital, a lot of times, doesn't have.
No, and I look at, like, Friday the 13th and all those movies, right? Yeah. Same world, Halloween, and realize going, man, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
They did a really, now that we've done it, and we've tried it, and we've watched how people do it, that's pretty good. But as far as, like, putting that into the mix of how to build this out, I think those are things everybody needs to consider based off of their genre and what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do certain things.
Sure.
So those are the basics, I think, when you're looking at is how you break down a script. I think if we can sum this up. You got the script. You look at how much money you're going to have.
Yeah.
So that all is before the formula, right? You take your five pillars.
Yeah.
Then you take how much money you have or how much money you want to spend on this. You take your script, and I think that's where you build your formula off of. That's kind of what I got out of this conversation and how my thought process worked, as opposed to going, well, we need good script. We need five named stars. We need this, we need this, we need this, because I don't think it works.
Well, you can only do that if you have money, right? If you're a studio and you have, let's just say, effectively limitless funds, then yeah, of course.
Of course.
But for the low, low budget indie level, you can't do any of that.
Correct.
You know, and
that's what I'm talking to. We're talking to our peeps.
I know.
113 peeps.
Maybe more. And I've met people who, you know, they say, oh, I want to get, you know, this particular song in my movie. I'm like, I've read scripts where it's like, oh, it's got Heartbreaker by the Rolling Stones. I'm like, dude, you're never going to get that.
Correct.
It's not going to happen. So don't write shit that is impossible to get. Now, you can't be faulted for not just plain ignorance.
No, right. And I think that's where we've come a long way, because I think we thought about it opposite. Right? With Cruiser, getting serious about that, and then coming over to Red Knight, it's, if we do this, we have a better shot of getting our movie out there.
Yeah.
Not, let's do this because we want to do this, or this is what it does, because I found out that some things may not return, because
no,
the world has changed.
Streaming has changed everything.
Exactly. So it's interesting on how we said, even when we pitched our investors, we knew their formula was right.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
If we do this, this, and this, we have a better chance of returning your money. COVID hits, things change, and now I look back and go, man, we could have thought about that differently if we knew what we knew then. But now I look at it and just go, man, we probably didn't dive deep enough into the formula or the aspect of it in order to, I don't know, maximize everything. I don't know. It was just interesting when Scott said that, and we talked a lot about it. Depends on who you are, what you're trying to do, what you're trying to accomplish. Those aren't formula things. Those are decisions you have to make before you start.
Yeah, and the other thing is there is no one single tried and true formula that works for everybody.
Correct.
As we talked about previously, there is no, if I do this, then I will get this result. That does not really apply to independent filmmaking as I know it, other than in a very broad sense. Meaning, if I have really terrible audio, my film is going to be terrible. Yes.
That's a bad formula.
Yeah, that's a bad formula. But there is no necessary good, you know, A equals B equals C. If I just follow these steps, I will get this result. You can follow all the steps and not get the result.
Correct. Because it may be the pad formula that's flooded.
Yeah.
And everybody else is doing that same formula. There's just not a place for you.
Yeah, it's like, again, yeah, going back to Blair Witch.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, everybody's making found footage movies. Right? They blew up. And most of them disappeared.
Yep.
Just, they came out of nowhere and they went back to nowhere. And then there's a handful that kind of thread the needle off Cloverfield, which came out many years after Blair Witch.
Yeah,
but
no, that,
but stuff,
mean,
like that.
Right. And the cream rise to the top and everything else kind of fluffed off. And guess what? You don't see many of those anymore.
Yeah,
there's an offshoot of it.
No, you still. I still see him. I mean,
not made. Really, you see some made?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, all the time. Oh man. All the time, man.
What channels you on?
Yeah, you know. Go on Indiegogo. You'll find six people trying to make a found footage horror film.
The new Blair Witch, right? No, that's a good point, because it is different levels of where you're at, what you're trying to accomplish, and I think you said that really well, because I look at some folks out there, and even the way we're trying to maybe reposition ourselves is, yeah, there's a formula for making the movie, you got to think about that, but there's also a formula for maybe the business sense of it, and that's kind of what we're discussing. I'm not going to disclose anything tonight, but, you know, from what we just discussed earlier today of going, maybe we're kind of looking at that wrong.
Yeah.
Like, how much content do you want out there? What's this? What's that? You know, do you make this because you want to try to accomplish that? Not even, here's the formula to make that. It's the bigger sense of the thing. Hey, good conversation, Greg.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it with what Scott was talking about last week. It's just kind of running through my head and still running through my head. I don't know if we helped anybody tonight.
Probably
or just
not.
Confused them more.
More than likely.
But I think bottom line is, you know, I think have a plan, work the plan. And as long as you stick to it and adjust where you can, but just be true to it, you know, remember the five pillars.
Yeah, or more important than that.
What's that?
The highs,
oh,
the yes. lows, and the in-betweens. True independent filmmaking.
That'll get you nowhere.
Nope. On the Indie Film Sucks podcast, brought to you by 88mm Productions. It's out, you know.
That's right.
Places you can find it, whatever.
Peace.
Indie film sucks. Indie film sucks. It's the Indie Film Sucks podcast.